Hi, everyone. Welcome to the TimingResearch.com Crowd Forecast News, episode number 257 for March 23rd, 2020. We are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and my name is David Kosmeter. I'm the creator of TimingResearch.com, and today we will be discussing the 339th weekly report. So I'm going to post it in the chat for the live attendees. You can also just find that at TimingResearch.com. And today I have arranged for Anka Metcalf, Neil Batho, and Jim, the option professor, to join us. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Jim, who will be moderating today.
Okay, great. And again, another big day. Market is very volatile last night, very volatile this morning, and now it's back on the volatility thing. So we're getting a lot of action up and down, and it's going to be very interesting to hear what our guests have got to say about what's happening now and what they think might be happening down the road. So we're going to start out by introducing everybody for the people who are not familiar. We're going to start out with Anka Metcalf and tradeoutloud.com. Anka, a little quick background, and of course, what you guys are doing at Trade Out Loud.
Hi, Jim. Hi, everyone here, Neil and David. Thank you, everyone, for having me here. And for those of you that don't know me and hear me for the first time, my name is Anka Metcalf, and I'm the CEO and founder of TradeOutLoud.com. I have been a professional independent trader focused on day trading futures for the first 2 hours of the morning and also swing trading futures and equities. I've been doing this professionally for the last 17 years. And prior to becoming a professional independent trader, I come with 10 plus years in investment banking. I own a company. It is TradeOutLoud.com, which is a trading education company that is specialized in educating individuals how to swing trade and day trade the futures and the equities market. We provide a lot of courses for beginner traders, as well as very proficient traders, traders that have not found the balance in the market and found the green light into trading. You could go to our website. It's TradeOutLoud.com to find out more information about what we offer. And I'm also the designer of an institutional proprietary trading system that is based on the 7 layers of price support resistance, specific trigger times, specific price zones, chart synchronicity and divergency, and a strict set of trading rules and a 10-point scoring system that enables myself and my traders to identify trades with ease.
So you got a system, and at the end of the broadcast, and other obviously other services as well, at the end of the broadcast, you can remind people how to get a hold of you and how they can learn more about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right now, we're going over to Neil Batho of TraderReview.net. Neil's been in this investment arena for many years as well. So background on yourself, Neil, and a little bit about Trader Review.
Okay. Thanks for having me on the show again. You know, I'm thinking back to when I was a broker right out of college, 999. And everyone's heard this story many times, but very exciting when you're there out of college because you don't eat well in college. And then the mutual funds will buy you lunch every day and cater it in. So I ate like a king, and I was loving it. And then in the training, they really just teach you to sell, and your only job is to gather assets. It's your only job, gather assets, assets under management, and basically never sell. So, you know, I'm just not a sales guy. I'm an analyst guy. I'm a trader, and you can't call a couple hundred people with the same idea all day long, because by the time you do, the move is already done. So I got out of that consulting, and I've been running my business, my newsletter, for quite some time, and I send out all my best picks to my clients.
Yeah, one of the things Neil's alluding to, and he does when he's on the broadcast, is the concept of if you go with a cookie cutter approach of 60-40 and just leave it alone. Well, if you leave it alone long enough, obviously the winds of change can blow. And if the people you're dealing with are just going to come back with a response that you're in there for the long haul, when you get a very big drawdown, you know, that might not be comfortable to you, because that kind of volatility on your principal could be unsettling. So, you know, by actively participating in the choice of your investments, you know, sometimes when you see something that doesn't look right, you can exit it, and you're not going to be sitting back hoping that the fund manager or the ETF guy will actually do something, because generally they don't. So that's, you know, he's kind of alluding to the fact that being active makes a lot of sense, because at the end of the day, it is your money and you want to have some control over it. All right, let's start with...
Thank you for being my consigliere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, people try, you know, probably wonder sometimes, you know, what you're referring to. And then when you go with a large brokerage firm or a large firm, and these firms really are going by the wayside anyway, where there's much commission to be charged at all. So, but the thing is they still will, you know, not make active movements for you that often. In other words, when you're 60-40 and you're at 3,400 on the S&P, someone might say to a 70-year-old guy, guy, why don't you go 20-80 or 80-20 bonds to stocks? Because that essentially reduces your exposure to the 3,400. And all that takes at a big brokerage firm is to switch from one fund to another. So it's not a big complicated switch, but most all don't do that, you know?
Yeah, right when I quit being a broker, I did learn some active trading strategies just in the last couple months. So some of them are out there, and I would suggest you got to work with a broker, find a guy with an active broker.
Yeah, you know, I think, and you're getting, you know, it does, this stuff that we're doing right now doesn't happen every day. Most of the time, obviously it doesn't happen, but if it happens one time to you, that's plenty, you know? All right. And the other person was saying also that the last time we got a whack in 08, you might've been 55 years old and now you're going on 65 to 70 years old. So you don't have as much shopping days till Christmas to go through these downs and then recovery type things. You know what I mean? Anyway, let's get on to where we're at today. Anka, you are up and we are going to ask you the $64,000 question of where will the S&P be from today's opening, which was 2290 for those asking, to Friday. And put your guessing hat on and tell us where it's going to be.
Oh my goodness. This is, I feel like I'm on that show, The Price is Right. I mean, definitely there's a lot of pressure in the market. I was just watching TV and Kudlow was saying that nobody would have expected this substantial drop into the market. And the reality is that we don't really know what's happening, you know, 1 minute to the next. So it's really hard to predict and to make a prediction as how things are going to evolve into Friday. But if you want like a percentage, I really, you know, I can't really a percentage. I usually am involved in the market, but let's start
with, because we're all guessing here, because obviously the whole world is guessing. So let's just start with a up, down, or sideways.
Up, down, or sideways. Oh my gosh.
It is hard. It is a tough
did
one,
you
obviously.
Start the timer? Yeah. Did you start the timer? Because I think my time is running.
All right. Let's go over to Neil and see if he wants to jump off Rick's Cafe's cliff over in Jamaica. Anybody who's been there knows what I'm talking about. It's a very big cliff you jump off of at Rick's Cafe. Anybody ever been to Rick's Cafe in Jamaica?
No, I haven't.
Well, people have whatever they do, and then they jump off this big cliff into the water. Anyway, Neil, what are you thinking here as far as between now and Friday?
I'm going to go with down.
And what do you think your confidence level is on that?
Yeah, I'm going to go like 60%.
Yeah. And, you know, again, what'll probably be dictating what happens here, because the Fed came out today and made all kinds of statements that they could do anything they want and they could do this and they could do that. And then, of course, the fiscal guys are saying, we've got something going. We've got something going. So probably what'll determine what happens this week is if the Fed goes more from here's what we could do to here's what we're doing, and then the fiscal guys go from we've got this package to actually having a package, right?
Never forget what Greenspan said in the last, I just looked it up, in the last bubble. I got to verify this quote or if it's just from the movie, but bubbles are regional and defaults are rare.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when he's talking about defaults are rare, I mean, in this environment, I just, and I'm going to have you talk about this, Anka, a little bit, because, you know, you have the investment banking background, which obviously has debt involved. I did a little bit of homework, and, you know, Occidental Petroleum 1 year out is paying 35%. GM and Ford 1 year out is paying 12 to 14%. Marriott Hotels 1 year out, 13%. Boeing 8.5%. Gap Stores and Macy's paying around 17%. So, you know, and Delta paying 9 to 15%. United Airlines paying 12 to 13%. You know, those are very big yields. And, you know, do you, Anka, do you, you know, is that something that would happen at the low, or is that telling us that there's a lot more to come?
You know, the thing is that there can be a lot more that is to be, that is to come. And I think that the bottom line here in the market is that nobody's sure what's happening from one day to the next. Technical levels have been breached. We have had a big escalation to the downside. And And I think that whatever the government is trying to do right now and sustain the economy is really backfighting the coronavirus numbers. So I think it's really hard to kind of have a good read on the market until we have a temporary bottom, and at least we have some kind of confirmation that is happening in the market right now. For now, I refrain from swing trading or from holding like long-term positions, because even though the tech sector is obviously affected, but it's the last one that probably is looking at that cliff that you mentioned in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. And it's right, you know, at that border. Is it going to hold or is it going to start running lower? There are some stocks like Nvidia, Microsoft, Apple that are still trying to hold very, very much the levels. And on the other hand, you have stocks like Boeing, right? Boeing has been literally basing for a few days now. And the prices, the stock is halted at this moment. So they're expecting some I don't know if it's still trading right now. I haven't looked at it, but it's definitely a really shocked market right now. Yeah. And I think that for the general investor, I'm not saying, okay, you can nibble here. To me, I think it would not be a good idea from my perspective to start nibbling here. Because it's still very early in the process. We still don't know. I mean, there are a lot of things that are still being announced. There are a lot of lockdowns that are still going on, and we don't have that kind of information where we could say, oh yeah, okay, we have seen a bottom, infected individuals curve is declining, and then, you know, we have to see some kind of optimism. And I think that the market, of course, is looking for a lot of stimulus, but I think on the other hand, the market is really wanting to see an antidote. It's really wanting to see a vaccine that is working. It's really wanting to see the death toll kind of like, you know, flatten. And mm-hmm. this is really worrying. And you know, whenever you hear news like, okay, they're deploying, you know, the Mercy onto the West Coast, right? I mean, this to me, you know, just creates a lot of market jitters. Like, I wouldn't be ready to fully commit, let's say, on the investor side just yet.
Yeah. I'm seeing the VIX peaked at 85, Neil, and then mm-hmm. we've had a rally to 76. And now it's in the 60s. So the vibe I'm getting, frankly, is that we are going to get a rebound. Now, you know, how much confidence you have in that is 50-50. But I think I would plan on some kind of a rebound here, and it might be fueled by obviously some kind of a deal coming out or something. Because, and it does look, you know, Anka over the weekend was pointing out AMD, and AMD's up almost 6%, I think, today. So she's right on, I think, as far as the leadership, NVIDIA, AMD, and that kind of stuff, you know, probably will lead us out of here. But, you know, do you look at the VIX much at all? And are you seeing what I'm seeing, which is a VIX that's kind of struggling to stay high? Ergo, it could give it up a little bit. And if it's going to give it up a little bit and break the 50 number, then you'll probably get a couple hundred points on this S&P here pretty soon. What do you think, Neil?
I'm going with down. What I said before was that all these people with 401ks, IRAs, everything like that, none of them have sold.
No, I agree with that. I'm just talking about, do you think there could be an interim rally and then another dump?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe for a day or two. That's why I sort of answered it.
And that's why you said 60-40, because the 40%, the 40% weight is the fact that we could get some kind of a bounce, right?
I could change my mind, you know, on Tuesday or Wednesday. But I mean, I will say that today we went long silver, mm-hmm. and I went long a U.S. non-tax stock.
Yeah, silver looked like it got sold out when it hit the 11 numbers, right?
I had to go long silver. There's going to be massive inflation. I told all my readers that they should also look into buying housing, because 10 years from now, house prices will be up 50% because of inflation.
And the fact that if they keep borrowing costs down, it'll cost hardly any money to buy a mortgage.
Yeah, they have to drop a 30-year rate to 2.5%,
right,
or Americans will go crazy. Yep. And the millennials will have some sort of, they'll try to raise up an ex Bernie Sanders.
You also make a good point on the metals, Neil, because they wiped out all the speculators, they wiped out all the Johnny-come-latelys, and so there's no froth in it. And now it has an ability, if it can hold, you know, 1350, 1400 on the gold, to build a base and actually rally from here. And certainly that 11 number looked a little cheap on the silver. And yeah. So now, you know, there's no froth in there because they just blew out the froth, you know?
Yeah. Back before 9/11, silver was $5 an ounce for many years. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, it rallied like crazy because of the inflation due to the war. And now the money supply has tripled then at least, and silver's at almost $13. So if you look at the money supply tripling, gold, silver should be cheaper, you know? And
I was going to ask Anka, as far as, you know, the corporate debt market, you know, a lot of them, like on the closed end funds, are trading at a huge discount to the NAV. And it seems like all the debt market is going down towards like the PIMCO funds. I mean, they totally got whacked. Anybody using leverage in fixed income is getting totally whacked. And it's going down towards 2011, which is when we had that sovereign debt crisis in Europe, when you had all those countries, you know, Spain and Portugal and all those guys who couldn't refi their debt. Well, you know, corporations got a ton of debt coming due in the next 3 years, and they're going to have to refi there. And maybe that's, they're telling us that that refi is not going to go that well. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, these are things that, you know, we still need to kind of like wait and see. But I think like taking a step back into the real estate market, I think that, and I agree with Neil partly, but I think the real estate market and the prices are going to go lower because with an unemployment rate of about 20 to 30%, who's going to get approved for a mortgage? Mm-hmm. But I think the prices are going to plummet at least 50%.
Yeah, for a little while, I wouldn't get into housing. Not now, but yeah. You know.
Not now, no. It's. I think it's going to be a process, but right now it's still, everything is, I mean, I'm looking, you know, at the housing market. We were actually looking, you know, and purchasing a house, and we were looking at the prices. The individuals that have the houses listed right now, they're stuck with them, but they are not getting any kind of offers. And I've noticed this, like in the last couple of months, there has been some kind of top into the market, 2 to 3 months or so, and houses are not being sold. So prices are starting to come down a little bit, just very, very little, but they're stuck with them on the market. They don't have a choice, but there are going to be very little individuals, a small number of individuals that are going to be approved for mortgages. Thinking about all the hospitality jobs that are being lost right now, thinking about, you know, all the restaurants, all the service jobs that are going to be, they're out of a job. There are going to be very little people that can still afford to make payments on their mortgage. They're going to probably, it's going to be a chain reaction, somewhat similar to what we saw in 2008 with some foreclosures. And honestly, I don't see the market, the real estate market higher.
The government's going to have to freeze mortgage payments.
Yeah.
Mm,
yeah. I mean,
and maybe that's why the banks are having such a hard time with some of these banking stocks going to 50 cents on the dollar, huh?
I mean, financials are obviously hit. Yeah. We saw a new low in XLF, and I don't know what the liquidity situation, I don't know how their liquidity situation is, but you know, the fact that they are closing, like JP Morgan came out last week and said, you know, we're going to be closing 1,000 branches because of coronavirus. This to me doesn't look like a good, it doesn't have a good feel to it, because here's the thing, they could have operated from inside, right? So they could have operated, you know, you could still go to the bank. You just don't go in the bank. You do all your operations at the tube, you know? Yeah. So I, to me, you know, the fact that they're closing 1,000 branches to me does not play well.
Yeah. And as far as the last time around, we had a housing crisis and a banking crisis, which is pretty much two things. Now we've got the consumer crisis because 70% of the economy is consumer spending. And how are they going to just spend too much money when their job is either gone or delayed and their reserves are being tapped and their confidence levels are probably shaken a bit. And I live in Nevada, you live in Florida, you know, mm-hmm. service economy is basically is our name of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, in Florida, people aren't eating out to dinner and going on, you know, different things, activities down there. And here, of course, we've got the strip closed, which is just shocking.
Hey, Anka, sorry, I want to ask a question because you worked in the industry. Yeah. Isn't it true that all the investment banking firms like JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, all these guys make more money on their trading floor than they do in all investment funds?
It's true. Yes.
I knew it.
Yeah.
And so who cares if they close the branches? Just keep the trading floor open.
Exactly. True. It's true.
Yeah.
And in 2000, what was this? 2000, I think it was 2017. Yeah, it was the beginning of 2017, right after election. JP Morgan and Stanley, they allocated more traders to the futures desk so they could take advantage of the 24-hour market, not only stocks.
Yeah, there was massive opportunities that day of the
massive, year. Exactly. There was a massive opportunity, and they were right on the they were riding the wave.
Can't they just drop the bids if they want, though? I mean, they can move the market if they want.
They could do whatever they want.
I know. I mean, did you see the bond vigilantes?
Yes.
That was, I didn't even actually know what a bond vigilante was. I did know that when bonds rally like crazy, there is always a big sell-off, but mm-hmm. that was, I've never seen anything like that. And Ed Yardeni coined that term in the 80s. And I remember listening to Yardeni on our conference calls in the late 90s. And it's incredible what they can do. I mean, you drop the bid, that thing's falling forward. Mm-hmm. They can drop anything they want, you know?
You consider him to be a pretty sharp guy?
Yeah, Yardeni's great, you know? I mean, I actually hadn't followed him ever. And then I came across some of his stuff the last couple of weeks. So I was like, oh my God, I remember Ed Yardeni. I think he was the Irma Bear or something. But I do remember in 99, he was telling us to buy oil. I do remember that. And we had some brokers in our office. Like, what are you doing? He's like, and one guy was like, selling tech, buying oil. And we thought, ooh, man, you're brave. You know, and I was thinking to myself, maybe this guy's onto something, you know? And he sure as heck was. Yeah. I wonder what happened to that guy in my office. But he made a lot of money for his client, thanks to Ed Yardeni.
Let's talk a little bit about indicators or methodologies and things like that, Anka. You know, when you're looking at, a trade, just to use an example, we were talking over the weekend on AMD. You know, as you looked at AMD, you know, what are the factors that kind of go into giving you some interest in that? Because obviously, that has worked out pretty good here today.
Well, the thing with AMD was the fact that a lot of I think that the demand for computers, for laptops is going to be super high. A lot of individuals working from home. And I think these are the techs that we need to focus on, you know, like AMD, Cisco, et cetera, NVIDIA, right? Microsoft. I mean, they're not going to go away. So they may drop in price. They may have good trading opportunities. But what I saw in AMD is actually a pullback on multiple time frames that were lining up for my perfect buy opportunity. Monthly chart came into the 10 exponential moving average. The weekly chart came into the 50 SMA. Also, the daily chart came in and started to cluster into the 2 simple moving average. And since it bottomed last week on March 18th, it tried to hold and it formed a lot of doji action. So to me, these kind of dojis, there were actually 2 or 3 dojis. I don't have the chart right here in front of me, but there were 2 or 3 dojis that were forming right on the 200 SMA. And for me, it's very simple. Like, I was looking for a push in the strongest stock in, obviously, in a weak market environment. I had my shopping list ready for stocks that may be ready to rebound faster than others that have a lot of weakness, like Boeing, right? So I wouldn't be a buyer right now in Boeing, but I would be a buyer in definitely in these computer related stocks. For me, AMD was simple, was a buy off the 200 SMA on the daily, off the 50 SMA on the weekly, and the 10 EMA onto the monthly chart. So it was, I don't use a lot of indicators. So I just use these moving averages and price action. That's all I use.
Yeah, the actual price action, and then mm-hmm. Getting some idea on the overall trend by using the the moving averages. Because, you know, whenever I did seminars, I go, I love moving averages because moving averages don't lie, people lie.
No, and the thing is that moving averages are
based on price and time. You know?
Yeah, and they're algorithmic rich zones. They algos love these moving averages. They know that a lot of traders trade off the moving averages, so they just hit the moving averages. Sometimes you have these little shakeouts that are happening around these moving averages because they're different kind of algos, but some go for shorter term, some go for medium term, and those that go for short term, if the price is under the certain moving average, whatever you're using, with 20 or 21 simple moving average or 50, they love these areas, or the 10 EMA, especially on smaller time frames up to about an hour or 4 hour. The shorter term algo just clicks below the moving average, and they go very short to the downside, just enough to shake take everybody out, and then it rotates and it goes back up. If the price is going to rise again above the moving average, then you're going to have a little bit of a rally. And that's what starts, that's what's actually forming these setups that we all trade as traders on smaller time frames.
I actually read that some of these algos can put in a ton of bid below the price, mm-hmm. and then just as the price is moving toward there, they'll drop a bid a microsecond before it's executed and buy.
I heard that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would not personally do that. I'm just saying.
No.
Isn't there a violation called spooning or spoo, or whatever they, yeah. what is that called?
Hey, they change their mind, man.
Yeah, until they show up. With regards to time frames, Anka, when you're doing your trading, which time frames do you tend to lean on? You know, is it the 15-minute chart, an hour chart, or are you using a combo?
Yeah, I use it. I use a combo. I go all the way out to quarterly charts, especially as, you know, for my longer-term trades. Mm-hmm. And I analyze. I love to use a quarterly breakouts or breakdowns. And a strong environment, obviously, I'm looking for breakouts. I still think that this overall market, even with this very sharp move to the downside, I still think that it has a chance to recuperate. I don't know if it's going to go back to the highs or not. I mean, nobody knows how impacted the economy is going to be and how we're going to recover from everything, from all the money that is being pushed right now into mm-hmm. the market and everything else. But this is still a very strong economy in my perspective. Let's not forget that we started to crash from all-time highs. I mean, we were, fundamentals and everything was based on a very, very strong economy. In terms of time frame, I use all the time frames. So for my day trading, I like to focus on smaller time frames, 1, 2, 5, and 15. So I execute trades off of these small time frames. And I never go against, if I'm day trading, I never go against the 1 hour, 4 hour. So I think that a lot of mistakes that beginner traders are making is that they focus on very small time frames because they see the small risk. And that's what attracts everybody into smaller time frames, but they ignore to watch the wider time frames, the larger time frames that are dictating the directional bias. Because sometimes they see, let's say, a short setup that is developing on a 2 minute, but if the 1 hour and the 4 hour is triggering and it's really having an inside price action within the prior range, or it's trying to push higher, of course that trade that you see short is going to trigger short, is just going to go like very little to the downside, and then you're going to see it screaming higher and it's going to stop you out. So I think, to me, it's very important to watch smaller time frames and use them as executional time frames. And I'm getting all my information and directional bias, execution, directional bias and analytics from the higher time frames, 1 hour and 4 hour. These are my guides for short-term trades. And yeah. also, these can represent short-term swing opportunities. In fact, there were two trading opportunities in gold that I have not taken. The first opportunity was based on a 4 hour rotation that happened on Friday, and it happened after 9 p.m. Eastern, and I didn't have alerts on it. I missed it. And the second trade that happened was in the overnight, happened at 5 a.m. this morning. Obviously, I was sleeping at that time, but 5 a.m. this morning, it had a really small risk in gold, amazing risk to reward ratio. Look at where gold is right now. So there are opportunities that happen 24 hours a day. And that's why, not only that I love trading stocks, because that's my first love, right? But I love day trading futures, because they have, you could have a lot of control over price throughout the 24-hour cycle of the market. So if you want to trail out, or if you want to raise your stop, you can do that. But if you're in a stock, you basically have to wait until the next morning.
Neil, on the silver, obviously on the SLV anyway, we went down to 1086, and obviously from 18 down to 1086 is a heck of a discount. On the throwback rallies, you know, a lot of people believe that the 10-day moving average is not a bad location to look for a throwback. But after it does that, you know, obviously maybe, you know, get out. Do you ever use anything like a 10-day moving average as a point of which it may go back to as far as reversion to the mean? But then when it hits that number, yeah, you want to get out of there?
No. For silver, all you needed to get in today was the daily, because there was a bullish engulfing candle that looks like a hammer at the same time. And I agree with what Anka was saying just recently. recently about you can trade the shorter term timeframes, but only in the same direction as the longer term timeframes. But in a situation like silver, this is a clear rebound. And it's, I would just say, just to get in right now, and as a disclaimer, you should never listen to anything I say because I cannot take it.
Well, you're giving, you know, just your, it's your opinion, it's your guess. And obviously everyone has their own opinion and their own guess. And you can't really give too much input to people you never met, right?
You know what? That's not actually true because 2009, actually when I was a broker, they said, don't worry, man. It's not if you're going to get sued. It's just when. And I thought, oh, great. But in 2000,
well, like I say, you know, that's why it's important to be clear that this is your opinion. This is your guess. You know the exact circumstances of everyone who's listening. And that's why they have to make their own decision and talk to their own advising people, right?
Before that final collapse in March, right. 2009, I wrote in my newsletter, I said, I don't care if you're 25 years old with 401k or you're a retired grandma living on fixed income, sell everything you have and put 5% into S&P 500 puts.
Yeah.
And no one.
Well, like I say, that's an opinion and that's what you're saying, but obviously, you know, you can't assure your opinions are going to be correct. Right?
I'm just saying silver is the best trade I've seen in a while.
Yeah. I was just trying to point out that it did get discounted off of the 18 number quite a bit, but I just was going to ask you, you know, say somebody didn't want to be in there for a long period of time because obviously anything goes from 18 down to 10 is kind of downtrending, right?
So there is no such thing as a long-term investor.
Yeah. If it bounced back to where the 10-day moving average is now, you know, 1380, would that be an area that you'd consider maybe grabbing some money out of, or what do you think?
I think I wrote my target is 18.
You're going back to 18 where we just came from?
Floors become ceilings become floors. So that's what I'm going with. But we got the triple leveraged. Not sure where that is today. But you know, I got a quote, a great ski racer, and I was a ski racer. I raced downhill. I went down hills at 85 miles an hour. There's a ski racer named Ken Reed from the 70s, first North American to ever win a World Cup. And he became a commentator later, you know, and he said, you can't win if you're afraid to lose. And I thought, I will never, ever forget that. And that was in the 80s, and I was a kid watching on TV. I thought, I will never, ever get what told. So, you know, in trading, it's the same thing. You can't win if you're afraid to lose. Why did you get out?
Well, if you're afraid to lose, that means you probably shouldn't be in it because you don't have risk capital. You know, if you're not using risk capital, that probably adds to your anxiety. And if you're anxiety because you don't have risk capital, then it's not your game.
Sometimes, you know, I'm not saying silver is a sure thing. I mean, this is kind of a bounce type thing. But sometimes you'll see trades that are literally as sure thing as you could possibly imagine as when the sun comes up in the morning. Like this crash, the 2008. 8 was a bit difficult, but in 9, the final part of it, that was so easy. And even if you've seen the movie The Big Short, there was the doctor, I forget his name right now, and he's on the phone to his biggest investor, and he says, this is a sure thing. And the guy says to him, so you're telling me you know more than Alan Greenspan? And he just laughs and he goes, I guess so. So, I mean, sometimes you're going to see it. You're just going to see it, you know. And that's
this thing, we were obviously at 3,400. When it break 3,200, that's a warning signal. Under 3,050 is another warning signal. Under 2,850. So there are signals that come along. And that's, I think, what you're saying is if everything starts breaking down, obviously the likelihood that it's going to start accelerating increases as the levels start breaking.
The greatest fear people have, and I know this from being a broker, the greatest fear people have is not losing because misery loves company. Mm-hmm. The greatest fear people have is getting out of the market and it keeps going up.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and the options, people roll them down to try to do that, right? Yeah, if they roll your position, you can get out a little bit.
If you sell and the market goes up, you are done. You are on the street.
Okay. You guys don't do much with the options, right?
I didn't do much with options, but some brokers do. But how are you going to call everyone? Can't. So you just put it in assets under management and take your 1.5%. Yeah. Or actually, some of them are, I forget the numbers right now. Brokers make 40% of what the firm makes. So if you got $1 million, maybe they're charging you 2% and you're getting 40% of that. I'm not sure if someone wants to tell me what the real numbers are now.
I was just wondering, you know, when the market was high, if you thought, hey, I don't want to get out because it might go a little higher, but I do want to protect my bottom. You could sell out of the money call. You take the premium, you buy a put, it's called a collar, and now you've bracketed your equity. And then when something like this occurs, you have some downside protection underneath, and it was paid for by the out of the money call. So it's a pretty reasonable way of trying to hedge yourself. So the options, you know, don't have to be used for abject gambling only.
Yeah, but most, I mean, if we're talking for an individual.
Well, let me give you, for instance, now, these prices are very down, right? And so you may think you want to get into this thing. Well, what somebody could do is rather than trying to figure out where he wants wants to buy exactly, you know, which day, he could look to the out of the money puts with the implied volatility at 75. I would imagine the puts are huge, huge, huge. So if you have companies like some of these tech companies and you think they are somewhat near the low and you're comfortable with the strike price minus the premium, well, it's at least a way of bringing cash flow into your account. And then if the market rallies and you don't get any stock, at least you collect all that cash flow. And if you get put stock minus the premium, you're not unhappy with that price because you think that price is reasonable.
Jim, so, you should be a broker and get shoot from the hip clients.
No, that's a very, that's an intelligent way to try to come in rather than saying, you know, in other words, like say the silver is at 11 and you think it's low, but you're not that comfortable buying it. And you sold a 10 put for a dollar. That means you're agreeing to buy it at nine or keep the dollar. And that's a strategy that for some people might make sense because not every single person out there is wanting to gamble crazy and wants to not care about risk and doesn't not want to lose any money. I do not care about losing money. I just don't think that's the profile of every single person out there.
Maybe you can buy some. I think only once ever I did a covered call in my newsletter, but if the VIX is high, that means options are expensive. So if you want to go in silver now and buy the sell the $16 out of the money calls, I'm sure it's probably a good trade.
Yeah, I mean, just saying, you know, with the options, they can be used for many purposes, not just abject gambling. Getting back to where we are right now, Anka, obviously, Mark is still bouncing around a little bit. You had mentioned ADM and NVIDIA. The universe of things that you're really, you know, interested in here is relatively small because of all the unknowns?
Very small. I am trading on a day-to-day basis. I take smaller trades in futures, and that's my main focus right now. And as far as, you know, long-term trades or even medium-term trades, like I said, I'm going to stick with my very small trading universe. I still have some shares of ZM, which is Zoom. We got in at $116, and now they're trading they have traded today at 164. Very volatile stock. Very, very volatile
stock. Like 20%. It's up like 20%, Anka, right?
It's up, exactly. It is up 20%. It's up 20% right now, and it has had an amazing run up. So I'm still making money, but very cautious, and I'm using very little risk. So size or quarter of the usual size that I use in trading. So very, very, very small size, even in day trading or swing trading. And that's because you can't really trade this market because it's so asymmetric. It has very small reward compared to the allocated risk. It is incredible. So that's why I have to go down on my risk. But definitely, you know, if our listeners are still, you know, watching AMD, AMD has been one of the best of bottoms, temporary bottoms that I'm trying to see here, and is really attempting to do a breakout. I think that if the market is going to start pushing up a little bit, AMD is going to be the first one to start moving to the upside, and maybe Microsoft and NVIDIA are going to follow. Netflix, I don't have a position in Netflix. I have been just watching it from the sidelines. I like the price action in Amazon. You know, like Jim Cramer was saying this morning, he said we can't let this economy, you know, be ran by only Walmart, Amazon, and Costco. I mean, these were basically the stocks that were that had a better, more robust structure to them. We'll see what's going to happen, but I have a very, very narrow universe, like I said, and I'm just going to play it out with this. I think that even there's a huge risk in biotech stocks still. They're extremely volatile, but I do love Neil's silver idea. And I like the fact that he said that he's still going to hold it, because you asked him, you know, if he's going to hold it into that 10 EMA. I actually see it for a first target into the 1350 zone. I actually think it's going to go for a gap fill, and it's getting ready for a weekly rotation into the 1245. So I think he's right on the money with this one. Good job, Neil, on spotting this opportunity. I didn't take it, but you have a really great trade here.
And even the gold miners are back on the bicycle as well.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, the entire sector. Things you were talking about, though, because there could be very much consumer changing here, because people are working out of the house and people are going with that social distancing, and that may carry over, which means Zoom may be a much more of a normal way to get together. And of course, that would open up the semis because of the need for, you know, for what they've got going. And so the semis plus the video conferencing stuff, you know, yeah. That obviously is not a bad theme right now. It's working out very well.
No, absolutely. And I was looking this morning at semis over 110. I think they have a potential for a short squeeze for a little rally into the, even for a $10 rally into the 120. I think it still has a lot of room. And again, you know, speaking of that watch list, you know, kind of like work at home environment, you know, some other things that I'm watching, stocks like Work, TDOC, Hewlett Packard, Dell, Apple, AMD, Cisco, Intel, Microsoft, CHGG, I mean, educational platforms, online education platforms as well. And of course, let's not forget about the Clorox, PG, Johnson & Johnson, Target. These are, you know, kind of like things that we need to focus on. But also, I was just ordering some stuff from Costco over the weekend. And I've noticed I was going through the list and everything was like sold out, sold out, sold out. So Hormel, right? Spam. Sorry, Spam. I was looking and I was laughing and I was like, oh my goodness, like Spam is out of stock. Like, when was the last time when Spam was out of stock? I mean,
That's made by Hormel, isn't it?
It is made by Hormel, exactly. It is made by Hormel. So I would just focus on these kind of stocks like Campbell's Soup, Right for Canning, Hormel, HRL is the ticker symbol. Also PetSmart and Chewy, ZTS. This came from Pfizer, right? It's kind of descended from Pfizer. It is the animal branch, medical branch from Pfizer, ZTS, mm-hmm. Zoetis. Also things like Netflix and Comcast. I mean, take a look at Netflix. It has been on fire lately. Comcast, ATVI, also Electronic Arts, TTWO, Amazon, and also Peloton. Peloton, very important, right? People are going to sit at home.
Exercise at home. Maybe the gym memberships won't go, yeah.
Exactly. And you're going to see the numbers on YouTube just soar, those subscriptions, you know, those free subscriptions on YouTube, they're going to be soaring. Their subscribers for fitness instructors, they're going to be soaring right now in this period.
Yeah, I think you're right. Peloton's up almost 5% today, so that's not too shabby. Hey, mm-hmm. Neil, you were doing the silver, obviously, and we're pretty clear on what that was all about. But you mentioned something about, I thought, an international stock. What country, what area, what are you thinking there? Neil, you said you did something with silver, and then there was something else you did. I thought it's something to do with international, no?
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I can't give away all my picks, is what I was saying.
Okay, well, let's talk generically then. Outside the U.S. are you finding some interest or something interesting? Because obviously, they're all going with the 10 or 20% of GDP printing press. So where is that going to work out in your view? Europe, Asia, Latin America? What do you think?
Europe is too slow at everything they do. I know because I lived there. The U.S. is going to lead the way out of all of this. People always look for the most sold off stock to buy when things turn around, but that's the worst thing you can do. It's going to be led by the leaders because they have the relative strength, you know,
right.
Unless there's an insane thing where a stock is down 80% and you know it, right? Like Caterpillar or something like that. But I'm looking at things to do with building because things to do with metals, because remember that the price of metals is denominated in US dollars, and the more inflation you have, more theoretically that price would go up, which is better for the company. And there's going to be construction, you know, I think that Trump.
So just to give you an idea, I mean, we're not talking about a recommendation or anything, but something like Lennar that's gone from 70 to 30, you would start thinking that there could be some value down here. In fact, it hit as low as 25. So 70 to 25 is a pretty big exhale. So are we ready to inhale with Lennar and that kind of stuff? Or at least
I'm not buying housing stock now, but oh no, wait, that's not a housing stock.
They make homes. That's what they do.
Yeah, right.
Pulte, Lennar, KB Home.
Bottom, just wait for the pullback.
Yeah, because they're down 11% today. So if you like them cheap, they're giving the cheaper price away. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, a wise trader once said that if you see a stock that you like and you think it's cheap, wait until it drops another 30%, then think about buying it. So. Yeah.
Right on, Neil. Exactly.
You know, I think that was in my stock trader's almanac. Book, which, yeah. Everyone needs to have on their desk.
In the metals area, Copper, obviously industrial metal. FCX is obviously gone way down, but today it's up 5%. Is there value at $5 a share in Freeport-McMoRan?
Yeah, I'm looking in that sector. You know, I remember when Freeport-McMoRan used to be Phelps Dodge, and it got bought out, and it gapped up, and that was peak of the market for many months. It was a long time ago. Unlimited inflation or unlimited bailouts, it's eventually going to go into housing. They're going to have to drop mortgage rates. I've said this many times. If they don't drop the mortgage rates and get millennials into houses, millennials are going to vote socialist, take over the Democratic Party, and have another Bernie Sanders. So they have to do it. And I studied history of these things. And after World War II in Germany, there was a big move to the left, even though they just got invaded by communists who took over East Germany. The conservative parties in Germany had to figure out what to do. And it all came down to only one thing, and that was the price of housing. And so they somehow got the prices of houses down. And next thing you know, the socialists went away. So if the White House is studying history, which I kind of doubt it, you know, because no one does.
I actually did a little research on the unemployment rate and the GDP and inflation. And they had this graph going all the way back to 1929 on the prices, you know, the levels of both, all three of those. After the Great Depression in 29, the first thing they did is this Smoot-Hawley thing where they put tariffs on.
I just remember that from Ferris Bueller, but go on.
And then after the tariffs, I feel like I was looking at history here. And then after the tariffs, Hoover increased taxes. So the Great Depression went on for 4 years because those two tactics were terrible. And it only really turned the corner when FDR came in with the New Deal. And I was just thinking to myself, you know what? We could see Biden get in there and it could be the Biden New Deal. And that might be something that could turn the thing around a little bit because, you know, tariffing everybody around the world certainly wasn't Phi Beta Kappa. And then, of course, hiking taxes seems like it would be obviously very self-destructive as well at this point, right?
The most amazing thing is you're either going to raise taxes or you're going to print money and cause inflation, but someone's got to pay one way or another. So you can drop taxes and your grocery bill's up 50%. So there you have it. You know what I mean? That seems to be the new norm. I just want to make a quick note because we get towards the end of the show now.
Yeah, sure.
Something that I noticed is that a lot of people don't know this, but you kind of know it, but when Ronald Reagan first got into office, interest rates started dropping from 18% right around his first year in office or so. So since 1981, and we're looking at like 39 to 40 years, we have literally been in a bond bull market for 40 years, from interest rates at 18% all the way down to zero. And as interest rates go down, bond prices rally because the existing bonds pay more, so they rally. But I remember when I was a broker, Dow hit 10,000, early 99. And I calculated just today, the compounded average return of the Dow from 1999 to today is 2.9%. Mm-hmm. And bonds have vastly outperformed since then. It's just incredible. So something that
yeah, I'm right on there with you because, again, the TLT, when that move happened up to 180, there seemed to be a real capitulation in the bond market. And with the amount of printing going on and their need to get inflation back up by any means, you would imagine that everyone who thinks rates are going to zero are going to find out that they're not going to zero at all, and that that this printing of money and expanding the balance, because the balance sheet's going to absolutely explode, you know. Yeah. And you know, we were 20% of GDP. We're going to be going up to way closer to Japan and Europe, which is way higher than us.
They're going to have to suck that money out as fast as they can. And yeah. You know what? I remember when often when there's a Democrat president and a Republican controls the Senate and the House, they act like real Republicans and don't want to spend anything. And then I remember when the U.S. government bought back its own bonds in the open market. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know if it had ever happened before. And they're going to have to do that because otherwise there's going to be big inflation.
Yeah, because the corporations don't have any money to buy it, and the individuals don't have any money to buy it, and the states and the cities don't have any money to buy it. So who's going to buy all these bonds they're going to issue? And obviously it's going to be the Fed, and that's where the balance sheet goes through the roof. As we come to the top of the hour, Anka, how about a little bit of what you'd like to offer to people out there? Again, as I've been saying to people, is that during this kind of environment, it's not a bad thing to go around and see different methodologies and different points of view, and then use all the information to make your own decision. And again, you know, you have your own special way of approaching the market. So how can people find out more about what you're doing?
Thanks, Jim. I run a trading room every day, and We day trade futures. We also look at stock trading opportunities, and also have a private Twitter feed that goes outside of the trading room hours. So traders do not feel left alone or abandoned, and they can reach out and I can actually, you know, give my trailing suggestions. And if there are any opportunities that are coming in the overnight, then we could just hop on those opportunities. So I run a trading room. They can find more details on our website. They go to traderla.com. They hit the trading room tab and they could just, we also have a one day test drive. And then if they like it, they can come back and enroll into on a monthly subscription or onto a yearly subscription. And we're also getting very close to our March edition of the Power Income Futures Trading Course, which is one of our best sellers. And that's because I trade everyday futures. We teach day trading and swing trading as well. And that starts March 30th. And if anyone is interested, they could go to traderla.com/futures and find out more information about the course. And if they need further information, they could just email me at info@traderla.com. And it is a 5-day course. It is online and it is live. And they get 30 days to trade with me. And what better interaction than live, right? It's not, they also get the recording for this unlimited retake. So there are a lot of perks that come with this course. So they could just visit the website to find out more information about that.
Sure. Well, it's a good way to get educated and then obviously make your own decisions after you get educated. Neil, you obviously have a very unique approach, I think, in that you're looking at many different things and you're trying to find where you think the best values are. And when you do see a good value, you like to be very aggressive about it. And there are a percentage of people out there who want to play that game. So how can they get a hold of you and you can show them what you do and they could see about signing up if they'd like to get more information?
Sure, Jim. Yeah, you just go to traderreview.net and I give away my free newsletter several times a week just based on, you know, whether we're in or whether we're out. I mean, I told a lot of people to get out back in January. I don't know if they did or not in my free newsletter, but, you know, I hadn't made that call in since 2009. I even wrote in my newsletter, sell your 401k. Hadn't written that in 11 years. But, you know, you can go, I use a top-down approach, right? So you can go to traderreview.net, get my newsletter. And if you want to sign up, there will be a link in there somewhere.
And they can obviously get the exact idea of what your opinions are and what your views are and what your calls are once they sign up for the newsletter, right?
Yeah. I mean, I use an indicator that I've used to get out before every market crash that I've never seen any other newsletter ever use. And I learned that when I was, the last couple of months I was a broker, and it's very, very effective.
Yeah.
It's basically like you're having a party and people start leaving the party. Yeah. When you see a few people leaving the party, then you think to yourself, I'm getting out of here too. It's a bit like that, you know?
And you're not tethered to one approach, one idea, one market, one anything. You're kind of, scanning whatever's out there and trying to find out what you consider to be the better setups, right?
Yeah, I don't care what I trade. It doesn't matter. And a good example I'd like to give is so many people regret not buying Apple in 2008. I regret not buying Gear One imports. I'll tell you that
much.
Right. You could have made like 4,000% or more, 5,000, 10,000%. I can't remember what it is, but it doesn't matter what you buy, you know.
And if you get it cheap enough and it's close enough to zero, then you know exactly your risk is between zero and whatever the thing's priced at.
Yeah. I just remember Pier One Imports was we might not go bankrupt trade.
Yeah.
And it was a fantastic, but you know, it doesn't matter what you trade. And you know, when you're at that party and you made a lot of money and people are talking about this and that, just don't say anything because you'll know. It's my approach.
Humility goes a long way with investing. All right, we are exactly at the top of the hour. And so basically you guys can get a hold of Anka and Neil the way they described. And right now what I'm going to do is turn it right back over to David Kosmider and thank everybody for being here. If you'd like to get my update that I give once a week via email, just simply email us at optionprofessor@gmail.com. We'll put you in the queue and then you'll be up to speed on the things that the opinions I have week in, week out. David, back to you.
All right. Great discussion today. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory to get the updates that way. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to the recording of this episode as soon as I can get it posted, as well as the past reports and shows there. So thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much, David. And thank you, Neil and Jim. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Thanks, everyone.